told us a minhaga zeh roz molacham molvilti chachamim. Ki gorim shmei elu meelu yaser chasidus amiti v'yayakam olim tzosu ba'olam. There is one result of this that we need to take note of. The fact that, as we described last time, people were not given the proper attention to the chovas halvavos, to the ava and the yira, and the things that appear not to be as rigorous as the sugis and shas and whatnot. It becomes very difficult to find people who really mastered the qualities of shleimus that we're trying to achieve and that the Mesillas Yesharim tries to address. He says simply because people are just not delving into the discipline as much. So then those who are not chachamim won't even have access to the discipline that may be sometimes provided for them by those who are higher on the ladder of chachma. So he says, people, when there isn't, if you don't, let's use a very practical example that we're connected with in today's world. If people are uneducated and they didn't finish fourth grade science, and they don't have a basic understanding of bacteria, viruses, how things are transmitted, how vaccines work, what the risks are, and what information medical research provides for us, so then, a vaccine becomes this, like, scary, superstitious, whatever that's gonna kill me. Meanwhile, obviously the science tells us that that's ridiculous. And we can't understand why people in Alabama are dying left and right, and the in Arkansas and Idaho and Wyoming, there's no beds left in the ICU, and we're like, just get the shot. So you'll have a headache for a couple hours. But, like, just get the shot. You'll save your life. So it's a great mushel. He says, what has happened? The discipline of science for certain sectors of the population in our country have become oversimplified or have become, like more superstitious than reality. So you can have a similar type of thing happen when it comes to areas of halacha and areas of Yiddishkeit. If people don't delve into it and they don't really understand what's behind it and what's involved, so then it becomes this sort of, flimsy, fluffy, vague idea, and it's hard to really understand what it's all about. So, and he says, just to put this in also in practical context, is people think that what Chassidus is about is simply saying a lot of Tehillim and saying a lot of Vidui and fasting and going to the mikveh in the snow, again, we're not putting anything down over here, but we're saying, that's oversimplifying it. If you say, there's all those people, the people who say Tehillim all day, and then there's the intellectuals among us who learn Shas, so then you're basically segregating yourself and denying access to a huge and integral part of Yiddishkeit because of this misconception. In the same way that a person can damage his or her own health and remove that access point for proper care of their body and their lives, simply because they don't really have a full understanding of what's at stake, what's being discussed over here. He says, "Our pashut, I'm sorry, chasidus amitian hirsav nechman rochav misir sechleinu. True chasidus that is desired, that is valued, becomes very distant from our minds." He says, "Our pashut, muslo rami aledinish lavadaite, because if you're not thinking about it, if you're not working on it, if you're not delving into it, so then it's just not going to be in the forefront of your mind because it doesn't have that significance." So that's what we're talking about. We're saying that, again, the basics, the principles, the fundamentals are in your kishkas. They're in your brain. But you're not going to be able to activate them like we were discussing yesterday. You're not going to recognize the details and the applications because they're not, that consciousness is not there because you've disassociated real chassidus with this oversimplification. Bottom line, the higher madrigals of chassidus and yir and ava, they're not indigenous to a person's nature. They're not always going to be something that you're born with, right? We know that there's certain instincts and reflexes that you don't have to work on, and they're involuntary. But the higher milos in Avodas Hashem are not involuntary reactions or responses. They are something that require work, right? You know, I remember, it just left an impression on me. I don't think I read a lot of books like this when I was younger, but you guys know who Dennis Byrd was? Dennis Byrd was a linebacker for the Jets who was paralyzed in the middle of the game. And it made a lot of news, just, you know, about safety for NFL players because, you know, very unusual to have someone, like, just, like, you know, in the middle of a play, just, like, down, mamish. So I don't know, it was something with his helmet. I don't remember what the details were. But he wrote a book, as you know, a couple years down the line as he was recovering. And I guess of the things that stuck with me from the book, he's a guy who, you know, he was a linebacker. You know, so, like, he grew up in, like, Oklahoma. You know, and he played in, like, one of these high schools, you know, like, you can picture, like, you know, all-American type of, you know, out on the farm. And I think they had a made-for-TV movie about him also. And, like, the thrust of the message of the book, which is very powerful, was how he ultimately learned how to walk again. You know, obviously he wasn't able to play ball again, but he got back on his feet, and years of therapy, and he pushed, and he was able to make great strides. And that determination and that focus that can get a person to make that journey successfully obviously started in his own years of growing up when he had this dream of playing for the NFL when he was a little kid out on the farm. And I remember in the movie they had this scene where on his parents' farm he had built this like took this scarecrow and like turned it into, you know, those things that they used to draw with the pads that they train, you know, just like bashing into the, you know what I'm talking about? So he had like made one of his own on the farm, and he would come home after school and just like 200 times bashing his head against the scarecrow, you know, like 200 times, maybe a little less intense. You know, there's stories about NBA players that would come home and just like take 800 foul shots, you know, just like refining their skills again. And but it takes tremendous determination. You can't get bored, and it doesn't matter how much you get hurt, but like I'm possessed, I'm gonna get this. And so that's how we made it to the NFL, and that determination and that commitment ultimately helped him you know, through the other challenges after his injury. So that's not what we're talking about, things that are not natural to a person. It is not natural to want to bang your head against hard wood 200 times in a row every day, you know, 7 days a week. You have to work on feeling this is important to me. You have to work on understanding that there's an end game, there's a goal. I'm going to reach something at the end of the day in order to make you feel like, okay, this is going to be part of my, like we said, in my bones, something that's going to be part of who I am and my personality. And that is not going to happen as long as these midos are something which seem like, okay, they're somewhere else. There's something that not practical, or again, this oversimplified view of what they are. Ella, actually, you're going to need tools. To get these things. So I'll borrow a mushroom from the Orchis Tzadikim to explain what he says at the end of this paragraph. When you're a kid, right, you know, so like a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, they move into a bed from a crib. So very often, first thing a parent buys, it's like one of those gate things that like attaches to the side of the bed, because the kid rolls off and hurts himself and falls on the floor, right? So Jonathan, thank you. Okay, so now that happens to probably just about everybody, you know, when they transition to moving to bed. But now, do you, if you roll around in your sleep, I mean, I don't know if you roll around in your sleep, but you need to actively, consciously stop yourself from rolling off the bed. I know some people who wake up like as they're about to roll off the bed and like they get themselves back in the middle of it, but like, right, that's second nature. That's become second nature. But did you get that immediately? No, that was something that took time. Your body needs to adjust, and your body needs. But it came from trial and error. That if you fall on the floor enough times, right, and you bump your head, so you don't want to do that anymore. And somehow your brain trains itself, right? You don't have to do it 200 times. Your brain trains itself to move your body where it needs to go and to be sensitive, I guess, at the end of the bed. I don't know. It's a very cool habit and an instinct that we learn. But if you believe that you can modify and adjust yourself to that point, where you can, even in the middle of your sleep, be in control of where you are and what you're doing, so then you got to believe that this can be done also, but there's a process. Nothing happens overnight. It's got to be a process. But if you're ready to accept that there are tools and there are skills that you're going to have to learn to get this done, then how could you not possibly also accept that you're going to have to devote time to this, right? You can't just say, oh, I know that to be a successful football player, I need to be prepared to just really, you know, push myself with all my strength into the other guy. Okay, but like if you're not ready to practice that, you're not, when push comes to shove, and the other guy weighs 350 pounds, you're going to run away. That's what I would do. How are you going to acquire this if you're not seeking it? So he says very sharp words over here. He says, this is all very logical. So what is the Talmud Chacham who, l'chora, he gets this, and he understands the necessity of this self-improvement and this progress? What's he going to do when he comes to Shemayim? And they ask him, did you put the time in? Did you put the time in? Or he said, I'll come to Shir every day at 9:20, you know, like when we're finishing most of that's when Shir really starts. No way. I'm gonna totally blow it. If I show up after Musa's over, 20 minutes after Shir started, so then like I'm gonna come to Shemayim and they're gonna be like, well, where were you? Where were you? After all, listen to this, Rabbi said, this is the ikar of what Hashem wants from us. I'm going to spend my whole morning on Baba Basra. And could be the particular halacha, again, we're not putting this down, but it could be the particular halacha that I'm learning about never or will never have any bearing on me practically. Again, there's total lishma. We're going to go back and forth debating the pshat, and maybe I won't even get the pshat at the end. Again, we're not downplaying the absolute chiyuv that exists in that realm, but there are things that are 10 times more practical that you cannot deny the obligation that rests upon me in that field, in that area. Now he says, so this, if you ask me, I think we should just put this, you know, at the over the whiteboard. First point he made, you got that, right? Like, how are you gonna pass the math test if you don't study the math? Okay? How am I gonna know what it is I need to do that's really important for my life if I'm not giving time to study for it? But then he says, how are you going to escape all the dangers that distract you from what you really need to be doing? If you don't know what Yirat Shamayim is, and you don't know all the different subsidiary categories and aspects and how you get it, how will you escape minahevel olami from the illusion of our world that makes you forget all that? What we're doing right now in this introduction is just sort of breaking through the mist, the cloud that most people never ever get through. Right? The most people, again, their concept of Musar is very flimsy. It's just, you know, someone yelling at me, fire and brimstone, you know, and I'm not interested in hearing it. They don't even understand the value of the Musar to be interested in putting in the time to connect with it. So he's saying, if you're not even aware of what it's all about, you'll never be able to combat the forces that are holding you up in the first place. That's your Shemayim. What about Avas Hashem? If you don't know how to implant it in your heart, again, with the methodology that we're going to discuss, how are you ever going to get there? How am I going to achieve Dveikus? How am I going to achieve Dveikus? By going to another Kumsitz? That's oversimplifying it. That's inspiration. That's not a long-lasting, deep connection. That takes work. That takes time. I need to learn how to be focused on living in awe of God's greatness. So that should be something that's in my heart. How can I purify my machshavos if I'm not putting an effort to clean out from the blemishes that my physicality naturally presents? You know, you drive a car for 10 years, it's going to start clanking, and it's going to start making noises, and it's going to start, you know, breaking down. You can keep driving the car, but eventually it's going to come to an absolute stop, and you're going to have to get it towed to the mechanic. Alternatively, you bring it in when you realize there's something wrong, get it fixed, and then you'll keep the life of the car going for much longer. Hello, imiano al davar yon amitia yon motzimol so amito metivim latzminim lamno so lacher metivim lahem gamkein. If we would get it, we'd be able to improve ourselves and we'd be able to share it with others too. Masha amr shlomo mitvakshana kakezav kamatmon chapsena oz tovin yiras Hashem. So this is it, Rabbi Say. Say Sims. Zok shlomo amelach, the wisest man to ever live. Im tivakshenu kakesef, if you seek out your shemayim and midos like money, so and you like a treasure, you search for it, then you'll understand your Hashem. So he says, just well, you know, I had a guy in Shir, he used to sit right there. I was so impressed. I was a big fan of his. He was very dedicated. He was in the army before he came back to YU, and we were schmoozing after he was here for a little while. And I felt like, you know, what are you doing in your free time? He's telling me about books he reads. So he, like, as a master, he graduated, I don't know, a while ago. It's almost 10 years. So he was, like, he read all of these, like, investment for dummy books. Like, any guy who, you know, who was a successful, mutual fund manager or writes a book, you know, like, soft covers especially, you know, like, he knew all this. So I asked him, when did you start reading these? Because he had a whole business plan, you know, for his life. And he said, like, when I was in, like, 9th grade, 10th grade, I'm like, whoa, that's intense, you know. But, like, once he got here, he was a man on a mission to carve out his niche and get his degree, you know, with all the honors and become an expert financial analyst and make his millions of dollars. Okay, I don't know, haven't spoken to him in a couple of years. Got to follow up and see what happens. But it just sort of, like, stuck with me as I'm like, this guy is so driven. Im tivak shena kekesef. This guy wants to be a successful, you know, a person in finances. So he's putting years to understand the world of finance before he even goes out into the field. So Shlomo Melch says you gotta. Shlomo Melch was not a poor man. Shlomo Melch was one of the richest men, right? So he understood the finances as well. And he's saying that I know what it's like to be a businessman, and that's the same type of energy and hishtadlus that you need to put in if you're going to become someone who has, we'll say, a strong ruchnistic portfolio as well. But listen, Rabosai, just this is a great, great line. Okay, and then we'll close. Just a couple more sentences here. He says, "Eino Omer." He said again, the line in Shlomo Melech in Mishlei is, "If you seek it out like gold, like money, then you will understand Yiras Hashem." It doesn't say if you seek it out like gold, then you'll understand philosophy, then you'll understand engineering, then you'll go to medical school. Then you'll understand law. Then you'll understand halacha. It doesn't say that. Elo oz tavin yiras Hashem. Harilacha shalahavin a yir tzach levakish shosokah kesev v'chapis shosokah matmonim. He's almost suggesting that this is at the top. This requires the most. You think, wow, pre-med. Okay, that's an intense commitment. He says, where is the major called pre-yiras Hashemayim? Right? Like, Rebbe, I'm really sorry. You know, like, I was up really late with my Yiras Hashemayim lab last night. Okay? You know, just like, I'm sorry, you know, like, the Thursday night is very hard for me to learn. Night Seder, I have a Yiras Hashemayim lab till 10. Right? No one ever said, like, I can't keep up with my schedule because the investment in growing as a Yid is it's demanding, right? I take it back. I do hear that from guys. But if we just try to, like, compare the language and if we cut and paste that into the sentence about lab, right, it puts in perspective, okay, where is my time being invested? Okay, and I'm not telling anyone to just, like, cancel your classes in the basement. That's not what I'm saying. But we just need to have a perspective that this is equally rigorous, but the product and the results are equally rewarding, if not exponentially greater. But at least say yourself, if I have time for everything else, I got to make time for this too. I got to at least make time for it.